This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 21st of November, 2025. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is that you may have noticed a problem with distortion on last week's recording. Our technical boffins have tracked this down to faulty cable connections on the microphones. We would like to apologise for the poor quality of last week's recording, and we assure listeners that the boffins are actively working on a solution. Now, if you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. The number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Centre back on market. School receives national award. And local heroes switch on Christmas lights. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Centre back on market. Council tries to sell derelict leisure facility. A derelict and deteriorating eyesore building will be remarketed as the council makes yet another attempt at disposing of the vandal-hit River Park Leisure Centre. The centre in Gordon Road has been empty for 4 years and increasingly derelict since a collaboration with Southampton University collapsed earlier this year. One of the reasons for the university pulling out was the cost of redeveloping the site. The building has been targeted by vandals, with windows recently smashed on the riverside of the building. Expressions of interest are due next month. The process will be followed by a public engagement session early next year. Andy Hodgkinson, Senior Director at Lambert Smith Hampton, said, "It's a fantastic location in the city centre, and we have already had a number of interested parties making inquiries. The process will be driven by the market, but we are seeking expressions of interest by December the 19th. The City Council has come under fire from critics who say the site should not be seen as a commercial opportunity, but instead a community asset. Rose Burns, spokesperson for the Friends of River Park and a former city councillor, said, "When will this city council wake up and realise that the value of this site lies not in its development potential, as there are significant constraints on the viability for any developer, but in the opportunity it represents to increase recreational opportunities, which will benefit the health and welfare of our residents and visitors?" She added, "Has the council not had its fingers burnt with the attempt to grant a long lease to the University of Southampton, which wasted years and came to nothing? Information from an FOI request, that's Freedom of Information, revealed that the university was unenthusiastic about the site back in 2019, preferring to focus on Erasmus Park, its site in Eastern Lane, Winnall. Some campaigners have been calling for the site to be converted into a charity-run Lido, as successfully operates elsewhere. Mr. Hodgkinson said a viewing day would be held soon for interested parties, with formal bids asked for in March. One factor will be that the site cannot be developed for housing for legal reasons. The City Council has been asked to comment. In March, when the university deal collapsed, Council Leader Martin Todd said, "We've had confirmation from the University of Southampton of a planned investment upwards of £30 million to their premises in our city. But following their consideration of the options, which took account of the overall economic environment for the university sector and for construction projects more generally, investment in River Park Leisure Centre is not part of that plan. Obviously, I'm disappointed, but now I understand the reasons. Now we need to look to the future. So I have instructed officers to begin an open process of finding a new partner who can invest in the site, subject to three conditions. The green space, whether park, sports or play area, tennis courts or access through the site, is wholly out of scope. The public have a proper say during the process. Provision of the skate park and indoor bowling must be absolutely protected."
School receives national award. A primary school has received a national award for its dedication to global citizenship and equity. John Keeble Church of England Primary School in Hursley has achieved the Global Neighbours Bronze Award. This recognition is given to schools that embed values of global citizenship into their vision and daily practice. Head teacher Amber Vidler said, "We are so happy and incredibly proud of our children for embracing the values of justice, compassion and global responsibility." Achieving the Global Neighbours Bronze Award reflects our belief that being a global neighbour is not just important, it's essential. Together, we are helping our pupils understand their role in creating a fairer and more sustainable world. The award is part of a national scheme led by Christian Aid in partnership with the Church of England Education Office. The scheme celebrates schools that empower pupils to understand global issues and take meaningful action for justice and sustainability. The ethos of the school is described by its tagline, "Rooted in faith, growing in community, thriving in learning." Its core values of love, hope, trust and forgiveness are embedded in everyday life and reinforced through the School Development Plan and Global Neighbours Action Plan. John Keeble incorporates global citizenship themes across the curriculum. Year 4's study of Brazil, geography lessons on global trade, and Year 6's unit on the story of chocolate all foster an understanding of cultural diversity and global interconnectedness. Real-life stories and culturally diverse texts are used to teach about climate justice. The school provides regular opportunities for pupils to reflect on global justice themes through pause days, themed collective worship and seasonal activities. Pupils actively participate in initiatives addressing global issues. Younger children plant trees, create climate pledges, and lead assemblies on plastic reduction. Older pupils engage in debates, research projects, and campaigns addressing textile waste and water scarcity. The school encourages pupils to share their learning and concerns through assemblies, newsletters and campaigns.
Local heroes switch on Christmas lights. Despite wet weather, crowds of people took to Winchester city centre last Thursday, November the 13th, to see, what was it, the Thursday before, to see the annual switching on of the Christmas lights. As per tradition, the lights were switched on by local heroes from the community who had been nominated by their family and friends. This year, the local heroes for the evening were fundraising superstars 78-year-old Terry Young and Pat Brewer, who was 82. Terry, who has been raising money for the Poppy Appeal in Winchester for many years, said it was very exciting to turn on the Christmas lights, and he said he was very proud. My daughter Natalie nominated me. She phoned me up and told me when I won, I did not know I had been nominated. Now I'm going to have a beer. Thank you to everyone who was in the audience. Pat, who does a lot of fundraising for the Winchester Hospice, said that she was initially daunted by standing up on stage, but added, it was fun. Sarah Davis from the Business in Development in Winchester rang me to tell me I had been selected. At the time, I was on holiday in Belgium with my family who lived there. I did not know that I had been nominated, but that was how I found out I had won. I felt very privileged. It is a privilege that people feel so happy to nominate me. I'm now going to spend some time with my family. Everyone is looking forward to being together. Sarah Davis, BID District Manager for Winchester, said, the Winchester Christmas light switch-on is the delight each year for us to deliver. We're always surprised and delighted by the huge crowds it attracts, and so happy to be able to start the Christmas festivities in the city. Terry and Pat are an absolute delight, an example of how an older generation do so much for Winchester. They've been fundraising for many years and have raised thousands for their respective chosen charities. We are so happy the crowd they could be here with us. Despite the rain, the crowds were also enjoying themselves at the light switch on.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Brickwood, John Albert, passed away at West Acre Care Home on the 2nd of November 2025, aged 95 years. Dixon, Marion Lila, died peacefully at home on the 13th of October, aged 85. Grant, Margaret Rose, died peacefully at Abbots Barton Care Home on the 2nd of November 2025, aged 95 years. Kirby, Anne Teresa, née McCaffrey, died peacefully on the 9th of November 2025, aged 81 years. New, Stanley Terence Alfred, known as Terry, passed away peacefully at the Chandler's Ford Care Home on the 2nd of November 2025, aged 87 years. Taylor, Stephen Peter, on the 6th of November 2025, sadly passed away after a courageous battle with bowel cancer. Reynolds, June, died peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital on the 6th of November 2025, aged 95 years. Shepherd, Susan, passed away peacefully on the 24th of October 2025, aged 78 years. And Smith, Mildred, known as Pam, died passed away peacefully in her sleep at Tegfield House Care Home on the 2nd of November 2025, aged 94. Question comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. She writes about a question that we are all asking. Thank you, Daphne.
In a recent online discussion, readers were looking for books with a question mark in the title. Once you start thinking about it, there are dozens. Why didn't they ask Evans or N or M from Agatha Christie? Is he Popenjoy by Anthony Trollope? And then there's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Bloom. That last one was published in 1970, aimed at young teenagers and looking at all kinds of topics of interest to young people, especially girls. Much of it still relevant now. It's not a religious tract at all. The title is the first line of Margaret's regular prayers. Her parents are of different faiths, and she has not been brought up in either religion, but she is experimenting through the book, as she does also with other aspects of her life. Friendship, clothes, boys, belonging with the cool girls. Margaret is endearing and real, but the book has attracted a lot of attention from censors over the years, with people trying to ban it from libraries because of its frankness. The title phrase has an enduring charm. It sounds quite teenaged and has been much parodied in US culture. But surely many of us could say it with our own names in there. It's a question we are all asking. Are you there? Are you listening? Can you help? A common cry is, I asked God for help, but he didn't answer. I don't have many clever religious thoughts myself, but that one was answered to my satisfaction when I was in primary school. Sometimes the answer is no. That may be hard to take, but it's not incomprehensible. If your child asks for something toxic, you would say no, even though the child might be very disappointed and not understand. We have to think of ourselves that way with God. We can't always see the bigger picture. My mother used to say briskly, you have to ask God for what is best rather than something specific. He knows what's best. I will say this is sometimes hard to accept or believe. But we go on, and all of us, if we are honest, must sometimes realise that we ask for something we're better off without. It did work out in the end. More question titles. Anthony Trollope wrote, Can You Forgive Her? It's quite a long book, and prolific horror author Stephen King called it, Can You Even Finish It? Though he didn't exactly give short measure himself. Forgiveness is a huge feature of Christianity, and although Trollope doesn't give it an overtly religious angle, it is a major theme in his work. He is always looking for ways to forgive and redeem and understand his own characters. We can all try that with the real people in our lives. It can be hard to get going on that, but the rewards are huge. The basic fact is that forgiveness works miracles for both parties. It isn't a one-way street. Kate Atkinson has a book called When Will There Be Good News? One answer is that surprise and joy come if you can manage to forgive someone. These questioning titles can lead us in unexpected directions. And that came from Moira Redmond.
Thank you. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Time to Get Real, please?
Yes, I can. And this letter comes from Rose Burns, and it's on the subject of our first headline article today. On its website page entitled Former Leisure Centre site, Winchester City Council has issued an update. It announces that commercial property agents Lambert Smith Hampton have been appointed to market the site. Marketing is scheduled to commence in the middle of this month, with expressions of interest due back in December. This process will be followed by further public engagement early next year. Has the City Council not learnt anything from the University of Southampton debacle? The University didn't want it anyway, despite the Council saying it was their idea. A Freedom of Information request provided an email to the Council's chief exec on April 17, 2019, which said, in fact, someone drove over yesterday to have a look and fed back to me in the evening. Although the location is great, he feels the size, planning limitations and potential land clearance cleanup issues all make it a no-goer for what we need in Winchester. I've not spoken to him in person, but based on this, we would focus on upgrading, redeveloping Erasmus Park rather than a new build. Sorry. The chief exec's immediate reply was, I appreciate your honesty and direct approach. It makes working together so much easier. So appreciate that the site is not perfect for you, and I can't confirm anything about other site in Winchester ownership, so I understand your decision to renovate your own estate. Let's keep in touch. If opportunities emerge, we should try to capitalise on them, as we absolutely welcome the focus on Winchester by the University. I would be keen to understand your plans for the art school on a completely confidential basis when you are ready to share, so we can see if there is any synergy with the adjacent site. And you hinted that you were thinking about moving graduation to the cathedral. Let me know how that shakes out. Despite the lack of public consultation, the City Council made a decision on March 4th, 2022 to grant a 5-year option period to the university, for which no money changed hands and there was no signed contract. There was no legal obligation on the university to apply for planning consent or to take forward any plans to develop the site. And there were no sanctions applied when it pulled out over 3 years later. The 5-year option period precluded consideration of alternative proposals for the site and, as everyone knows, the building has fallen into a disgraceful and unsafe state of dereliction. It is costing the taxpayer tens of thousands of pounds to ensure, to keep secure and to maintain. WCC has budgeted for its demolition, but the leader has said they will not undertake this until wider plans for the site have been determined. How is it even possible that the council proposes to market this site yet again to a commercial investor for development, to be let on a 150-year lease, apparently blind as to the legal constraints and complexities inherent in the transfer of this particular piece of land from public to private ownership? What about the effect on the adjacent River Itchen, designated SSE and SSSI, and of international importance, of the proximity to the South Downs National Park and Wyndal Nature Reserve, and of the landscape character, as well as the adjoining historic Hyde Abbey Garden, nearby Hyde Gate, Grade 1 scheduled ancient monument, St Bartholomew's Church, Grade 2 listed, and the Hyde Conservation Area? There is no up-to-date flood risk assessment. Although the site is assessed by the Environment Agency to be at high risk, there is no mention or recognition of the shortfall in the provision of public open space in the centre of Winchester. And the plan for the development conflicts with the council's Climate Emergency Action Plan. The whole of the River Park Recreation Ground was sold in 1902 to the council as the King Alfred Millennium Project, bought by way of a levy from the community and grants, and it was intended to remain in public ownership for public recreational use. That is the way it should stay. If a leader emerges, publicly owned and managed, so much the better. If the land is returned to green grass while we decide what to do with the site, that would deal with the problem of the degraded monstrosity that the old building has become. Let's get real. And that's from Rose Burns, Friends of River Park, Hyde, Winchester.
And we're going to stay real with from the local to the national. This letter has been given the title Poor Leadership. It comes from Peter Rees, who lives on Monarch Way, Badgers Farm, and he writes as a member of the Winchester constituency Labour Party. Resident National Health Service doctors have been striking for the 13th time. Of the 77,000 BMA members eligible to do so, only one third voted in favour of going on strike. They do have a number of issues, including that in annual salary terms they've had a real pay cut since 2008-2009, and that there are too many doctors chasing too few positions and not enough training places. Putting this in context, the starting salary for a resident doctor is £38,831, rising to £73,992 for a 40-hour week. These sums can be supplemented with payments for additional and unsocial hours, for night shifts and weekend call-out. Large geographic location allowances can also add over £5,000 per year. The current average resident doctor's salary is approximately £54,300. The British Medical Association is demanding an immediate pay increase of almost 30%, rejected by the government. The Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Wes Streeting, has guaranteed an extra 2,000 training places by 2028, with 1,000 of these next year. He has offered a revision of exam fees and a salary increase of nearly 5%. The BMA have refused to meet to negotiate or discuss the offer. The BMA claim is a ludicrous and disproportionate expectation, and in further threats, they are promising further strike action. The majority of National Health Service doctors, including BMA members, have not supported the strike. It has put excessive pressure on colleagues, caused difficulty and disruption for patients, and simply added to the challenges facing the National Health Service, including an estimated cost of £300 million. Since July 2024, the Labour government has made outstanding progress repairing the damage done to the National Health Service by successive Tory governments. Productivity is up by 2.4%, hospital stays have been shortened, same-day discharge increased, reduced reliance on agency staff, appointment waiting lists reduced by 230,000, increased staff retention, reduction of awaited treatments down by 300,000, more surgical hubs and diagnostic treatment centres, and improved use of technology. These improvements would not have been achieved without the tremendous efforts of the entire 1.7 million NHS staff. We must not let irresponsible strike action damage the success and outstanding progress. Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Now, Richard C. Kensington writes about coastal delays. Natural England has fulfilled its role to investigate how to improve coastal access along a 35.4-mile or 57-kilometre stretch of the Hampshire coast between Highcliffe and Calshot. Officers from the relevant access authorities have provided Natural England with expert local advice and helped to make sure there is full consultation with local interests during the development of the route. On Wednesday, March the 14th, 2018, Natural England submitted a report to the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, setting out the proposals for improved access to the coast. The period for making representations and objections about the report closed at midnight on May the 9th, 2018. Objections were forwarded for consideration by an independent planning inspector appointed by the Secretary of State. The inspector will make recommendations to the Secretary of State in respect of each one. Natural England may not make any further changes to the report as a result of the representations and objections, but will make comments about them for consideration by the Secretary of State, and in the case of objections, the appointed person, who is an inspector from the Planning Inspectorate. 7 years have now passed, and as far as we are aware, the Planning Inspectorate has not reported to the Secretary of State, who has to consider all the representations and objections before making a decision about Natural England's report. Who is holding up this process? Could our political representatives please make inquiries and report back to the letters page? And that's from Richard C. Kensington, who is the walking environment officer for the Hampshire area of the Ramblers.
And Hugh McCrossan wants a parking rethink. While it is reassuring to read that, according to the Business Improvement District, BID, Winchester is bucking the national trend with fewer empty shops, I can't help thinking about the many, mostly long-standing independent businesses that have closed their doors in Winchester in recent times. And that's Chronicle, November the 13th. In my view, the local changes in parking arrangements have contributed greatly to that, and wonder how many tens of thousands of times those local businesses' shop tills would have rung up profitable receipts and carried on if the local half-hour free parking had not been abolished. It provided local residents, as opposed to visitors and tourists, with the encouragement and opportunity to shop at one or more local shops on a regular basis, on a single quick local visit, without contributing extra funds in parking fees to the money-grabbing operators of the current parking system. Is it any wonder the choices so often made by, or enforced on, so many of us to visit out-of-town or online alternatives to do our shopping? Surely it's time for the City Council to see sense and to bring back that valuable short parking concession while we still have local independent businesses to support. Before Winchester goes further along the route, it seems to be heading towards becoming a could-be-anywhere city. And that's from Hugh McCrossan, Broad Chalk Down, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Slightly away from Winchester now, this is an alert over Airfield, and it comes from Hugh Sawyer from Foyle Park in Basingstoke. Did you know that our dwindling green belt is in the headlines again with the prospect of Popham Airfield being destroyed? The draft local plan of Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council proposes the erection of no less than 4,250 houses over the Airfield area. Without any apparent recognition of the effects of the unrestricted tide of new buildings stretching out from the town, the council expressed scant concern for the loss of countryside. Indeed, in its response to objections, the council displayed an astonishing arrogance and condescension. Quotation. Whilst the airfield makes a contribution to aviation in the wider area, it is not considered that it is such a significant part of the national network of general aviation airfields that its loss should be resisted. The loss of employment and community and sporting events associated with the airfield are recognised, but are not considered significant enough to justify the prevention of the loss of the airfield. These uses are expected to relocate. This take-it-or-leave-it attitude should be resisted. If it's Popham today, it could be an infill between Basingstoke and other surrounding villages tomorrow. Be warned. In other times, I might suggest writing to your Member of Parliament, but there may be better listeners. See PophamAirfieldMatters.org. Hugh Sawyer, Foyle Park, Basingstoke.
And this letter comes from several groups of drivers, and it's headed Speed Limits. Road Safety Week commenced on November the 16th. Motoring groups have combined to offer common sense suggestions for the government's safety review. There has been too much emphasis on speed limits when illegal speed is only seen in a small fraction of accidents. Instead, authorities should be encouraged to stick to the proven 85th percentile rule, which gets high compliance. Not really sure what that is, but anyway. Weightier factors include lapses in judgment and attention, including tiredness. Authorities should address the latter by axing obstructive measures that make people drive further and cause driver frustration. Concentration can also be improved by removing cluttered signs that distract attention. The greatest benefits can come from prevention campaigns that remind all road users to do their bit and show consideration for each other. Rather than penalising vehicle use, authorities should be incentivising skilled driving. And that comes from Rethink London, Disabled Drivers UK, and over 20 community motoring groups.
And Stephen Percy warns us about bungling amateur local government management. After hearing an excellent presentation by our local councillor, Jackie Porter, on the forthcoming reorganisation of local government in Hampshire, I'm convinced that it offers the promise of increased clarity of who does what in our area, significant efficiency, improvements and cost savings. And the establishment of a combined mayoralty for the county offers the prospect of greater devolution, improved policy coordination and long-term funding. However, achieving these positive ends will require much patient, hard work and cooperation by local councillors and officers over the coming years, and much detailed negotiation with other districts and central government. For this daunting challenge, we clearly need sensible, experienced professional representatives with a history of competent community service. What I suggest we do not need is the amateur, bungling, chaotic leadership that we have seen demonstrated in Kent, Cornwall and Lancashire councils in recent months. At this critical moment, I do hope that voters will reflect on this when they cast their votes in the elections in May next year. And that's from Stephen Percy in Easton.
And the last of the letters is helping to promote Edward Elgar. Oh, there's another letter, isn't there?
No.
Okay. From Jeremy Neville, who writes from Bishopstoke. The recent release of the film Choral, which focuses on a story that has at its heart the music of Edward Elgar, provides an opportunity to remind readers that the southern branch of the Elgar Society, which disseminates news and information about the life and work of one of England's greatest composers, happens to be based in Winchester. Membership is open to all. Society meetings, which usually include an informative talk by a leading figure in the musical world, with musical illustrations and examples, take place at the St. Lawrence Parish Room in Colebrook Street. At present, the Southern branch is looking for someone with a love of Elgar's music who possesses skills in website management, plus the time to help promote the society and its aims. Anybody interested in finding out more is welcome to contact the Elgar Society. It's simply elgarsociety.org. Jeremy Neville, Guest Road, Basin, Bishopstoke.
Thank you, everyone. If you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can send an email to news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll carry on now with editorial comment, first person, Belgarum, and we have a letter from Westminster this week. I will start. The editor heads up her article this week with, as you guess, "Here we go again at River Park Leisure." So here we are. The future of River Park Leisure Centre is again in the spotlight. Some 6 months after the deal collapsed with Southampton University, the City Council is again marketing the site. Readers of Greek mythology will be familiar with Sisyphus, damned with the eternal punishment of having to roll a boulder up a hill, only to see it, near the top, slip from his grasp and rumble back down every time, and have to start again. According to Wikipedia, he was the king of Corinth. Perhaps Winchester could look to make a twinning arrangement with that Greek city. After all, we have the Sisyphean torment of Silver Hill Station Approach and, fearfully, the River Park Leisure Centre. This Chronicle editorial comment has written about the Leisure Centre before and urged the council to explore less intensive forms of development than the huge expansion of the School of Art that was envisaged before the university pulled out earlier this year. We support the view of the Friends of River Park that as the land was handed to the city for recreational use, it should be retained as such. The university proposal would have seen the site effectively privatised. But it would appear the council is wedded to the idea that big is best. Why is this? Is it a collective ego thing? Management group think? The collapse of the university deal is a chance for a rethink. Council leader Martin Todd has called for proposals. Here's one. An outdoor swimming pool called a Lido. A splash paddling area for young children. Public toilets that work. And a cafe. Now is the time for the Lido campaigners to develop plans and, crucially, costing. Once there are hard numbers, then the work can start to fundraise and try to make it happen. No doubt the City Council will argue that a Lido is unfeasible and impossible to make happen. Was it Nelson Mandela who said, "Everything is impossible until it's done"? At the very least, the centre really does need to be demolished. It is becoming an embarrassment. And Yunan Ezra writes about a rock and a hard place for the BBC in first person this week. Daphne.
We all have an opinion about the BBC. What is good, bad, or indifferent? including our likes and dislikes. Our opinions vary from absolute love to absolute hate. The range of media that exists now, which is available 24 hours a day, is mind-boggling. Add to this the number of opinion-led bits that creep into this constellation of choice, including the established leanings of the printed word, it's difficult to judge what is true or false. Also, because we all contribute to the BBC, we all own it, so it's ours, and our views should be listened to. The BEEB is a very large organisation. Its structure, in terms of its national output and what or how its management comes into contact with us at a local level, is not always clear. Given the size and complexity of this body, an individual view, however expressed, can seem meaningless unless you are a celebrity, a politician, or the president of the USA. You can write, email, turn up at the local HQ, or join one of the many forums. It can be intimidating, but persistence can sometimes pay off, particularly if the programme or issue has created a stir. This, together with the complex national relationships between the BBC board and senior staff and the government of the day, make it a bit opaque to most people. This, together with the fact that huge parts of the content we hear and see is often contracted out to numerous production companies, makes for a rich, diverse, often engaging mix of output. At the time when this was being slowly introduced, there was much debate about editorial control, quality assurance, etc. But in practice, this mixed economy has worked. However, when something does go out, it is the BBC that is responsible. Hence, when mistakes are made, they need acknowledging quickly. It is the ability to be light on its feet and transparent when this happens that has not been evident lately. There are many mixed emotions and views about the BBC. They are from the light at the top of the hill to being institutionally biased. Left-wing politicians see the news coverage as promoting the right, with the latter often screaming the same refrain. Rock and a hard place are probably an accurate description of where the editorial control of news finds itself. But this is where we need some sort of perspective. So often, particularly in conflict zones or where news coverage is seriously controlled, the BBC is seen by the people in those regions as the only coverage that is closest to the truth. The coverage of news at the BBC has changed. The interviews, particularly with politicians, have become more adversarial. This is probably a good thing in terms of getting to the truth, but is it the journalists trying to make a name for themselves? Probably a bit of both. Also, the line between a reporter delivering the facts and integrating that into an opinion is getting blurred. It is a natural human condition to express or interpret a happening in one's own individual way, but care needs to be taken, and again, transparency demands this. The BBC is an integral part of British culture and much appreciated around the world. So much of its coverage, imagined by so many creative people with sincerity, care, integrity, and experience, is applauded. But to maintain this reputation, it needs to take care.
Nick has the Belgarum article this week, King's Award Recognition. Nick.
Yes. A charity run entirely by unpaid volunteers has been given a prestigious award. Testwood Lake Sailability has been recognised with the King's Award for Voluntary Service 2025, the highest award for volunteer groups across the UK. the Totten-based organisation, which allows people with learning or physical disabilities to experience dinghy sailing, was honoured with the prestigious award for its work with the community. The charity, run entirely by volunteers, aims to give people with a disability the opportunity to experience the freedom and joy that sailing brings. Some people simply enjoy a relaxing sail on the lake, while others develop their skills and some even go on to sail solo. The award, equivalent to an MBE, recognises the outstanding work by local volunteer groups to support their communities. The trustees said, "How incredibly proud and delighted we are to have received the King's Award for Voluntary Service 2025. This honour recognises the amazing contribution and hard work of our volunteers, past and present, have made over the years to grow Testwood Lake's sailability into not only a successful, but also an enjoyable charity to be involved in."
Thank you. And we have a letter from Westminster this week. It's from the Winchester MP, Danny Chambers. Paul.
"We don't have to choose between tax rises on middle-income people versus public service cuts. If only we had the political will to make the real tough choices. As we prepare for the government's budget announcement, I get the sense that most people thought we were done with the Conservative era of running down public services. So why is it that we're still hearing about these tough choices the government has no choice but to make due to the dire economic circumstances we still find ourselves to be in? The targets of tax rises and service cuts have been pensioners, small businesses, those receiving child support, our family-owned farms, and children with special education needs. At the same time, everyone is facing higher bills from the energy and water companies alongside higher rents and mortgage payments. I've spoken with many small businesses in Winchester and farmers across the Meon Valley who are trying to weather the storm of cost increases they're facing from the private utility providers, landlords, and the government all at the same time. The Chancellor is so desperate to balance her own books, I fear she'll end up breaking everyone else's. But despite what government ministers and the pundits keep telling us, there are plenty of options available to cut the cost of living for workers and the cost of doing business without resorting to punishing lower and middle-income people. I've been backing Liberal Democratic proposals to cut costs and get the economy growing. Firstly, the government could easily reform our regulators like Ofwat and Ofgem and have them put an end to the constant price increases from the private providers. To help our high street and small businesses, we can cancel the increase in national insurance contributions and introduce a reduction to VAT on hospitality. That would make it cheaper for everyone to afford those small joys like a meal out or a coffee with friends. And I would put our small businesses on a much better financial footing, helping them compete with the big corporations who find ways to avoid a lot of the tax that small businesses can't. We can also cancel the cut to winter fuel payment, lift a two-child benefit cap, and begin to restore local council funding for care services. How? We can do this by focusing taxes instead on the big banks' profits, the gambling industry, and the international tech giants who find all manner of ways to avoid paying their fair share in tax. Rejoining a customs union with the European Union would also boost the UK economy by tens of billions. It's my view that the reason these choices have not been taken is because they're the real tough choices. The ones that ask more of the richest and most powerful corporations in our society. If we can muster the political will to make these choices, we just might begin to restore growth and prosperity for everyone in the country. If you've been struggling with the cost of living or have any other concerns I can help with, please get in touch at danny.chambers.mp@parliament.uk.
Thank you very much, Paul. And now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. On Thursday the 27th of November, that's next week, we have there's a Christmas market at Ropley. It's at the Parish Hall in Ropley. And on Friday the 28th of November, in Romsey, there's a town hall market and pop-up cafe. That's from 10:30 a.m. I should have said that the Ropley market is at 6 p.m. It's an evening event. Then on Saturday the 29th of November, panto season starts in Winchester. Puss in Boots is the show this year. And there are various show times. It starts at 7 p.m. on the 29th, and tickets are available from the Theatre Royal box office. On the 10th of December, moving forward a little bit, the Overtones Christmas Party. The Overtones are back and they're bringing the ultimate Christmas celebration with them. They're a number one vocal harmony group, and they are on at the Mast Mayfair Studios in Southampton. On Saturday the 13th of December, the Alsford Community Choir present their Christmas concert, Deck the Halls. That's at 7:30 p.m. That's at St John the Baptist, East Street, Alsford, and tickets are between £12 and £15. And in Kingsworthy, the Worthy Players will be starting panto on Friday the 5th of December, and this year it's Snow White by Alison Walford. Tickets available from the Worthy Players website. Right, the lighting up times for the next week. On Saturday the 22nd of November, the sun will set at 4:09 p.m. And on Wednesday the 26th of November, the sun will rise at 7:39 a.m. and will set at 4:06 p.m. And now we are on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Looks like you all had a great time. Visitors to Winchester might have thought they had landed in a foreign country as a taste of Nashville's country music scene took over the city's Broadway. The historic Guildhall was awash with cowboy hats, denim and cowboy boots on Saturday, November the 15th for a country music extravaganza. With two shows, one in the afternoon and one in the evening, the sellout event paid tribute to some of country music's greats. The lineup began with a Shania Twain tribute, Becky Lane, who also performed songs made famous by Tammy Wynette, Dolly Parton, and, of course, Shania Twain. A line dance lesson for the enthusiastic audience followed. Hundreds of people were embracing the moves expertly demonstrated on stage. There was also a tribute to Luke Combs by the artist Hurricane, with the country DJ filling the gaps between acts before the finale from the Honky Tonk Angels. The show is a spin-off from the Summer in Nashville festivals, which saw 10,000 people enjoying country music across the UK. With the artists changing with each show, some aspects, such as the line dancing and the country DJ, are always the mainstay of the shows. With 800 people coming to the Guildhall, Byron Ainsworth, one of the organisers of Saturday's events, said it was clear that people in the UK loved country music and the demand was there. From the smiles on the audience's faces, this can't be denied. And there's a lovely photograph of the hall absolutely packed. You just couldn't move. And the cowboy hats, they've got their arms in the air, they're all smiling, they're having a really great time.
Dazzling Lantern Parade is returning. Winchester Cathedral's Lantern Parade, marking the beginning of Christmas festivities, returns again this year. Taking place from the west doors of Winchester Cathedral on Monday, November the 24th, the theme this year is light, bright and sparkling, inspired by Jane Austen's description of her novel, Pride and Prejudice. The parade will mark 250 years since Austen was born. The cathedral has shared a film with lantern-making ideas on its website for people who wish to attend the parade. Attendees have a chance to receive an award for the best small lantern, best last large lantern, and best on-theme lantern, and best lantern by an organisation, group or business. Those wishing to attend a service before the parade need to register their interest online and gather from 5:30 p.m. At 5:45 p.m. there will be carol singing. The lanterns will be judged at 6 p.m. with the parade beginning at 6:30 p.m. through the city. The parade will head past Bargate, turning left at Pret-a-Manger, heading up the High Street to the Buttercross Monument, where it will steer left, walking through the passage between Lochdane-en-Provence and Needed. The parade then walks across the diagonal in the cathedral grounds and will end outside the west front of the cathedral. A closing speech is expected to be made and awards announced by 7 p.m. by the Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream, Interim Dean of Winchester Cathedral. The parade is sponsored by the law firm Trethowans, and that's accompanied by a lovely dazzling picture, presumably taken last year's Lantern Parade, and the outside of the cathedral beautifully lit up, and a huge deer lantern there brightening up the proceedings. And a reminder, that parade is on Monday evening, next Monday, the 24th of November.
Concerts will celebrate 40th anniversary. A special day of performance is set to take place to celebrate King's Chamber Orchestra, the 40th anniversary. And they will perform two concerts to mark this milestone at Hope Church in Middlebrook Street Centre in Winchester on Saturday, November the 24th. The first is a teddy bears concert, an interactive concert designed for children and families, offering an afternoon filled with music, laughter and surprises. In the evening, the orchestra will play The Light Fantastic, a mix of classical favourites, carols, storytelling and festive moments, all delivered with the KCO's signature joy and creativity. Senior Pastor Tim Blaber said it's a real joy to welcome the King's Chamber Orchestra back to Winchester in their 40th year. These concerts have become a highlight for many locally, a chance to gather, enjoy something beautiful and step into the season in a really uplifting way. We'd love to welcome people from across the city, whether you've been before or you're coming for the first time. Formed in 1985, the orchestra is a professional orchestra that has evolved over the decades. They initially performed as a symphony orchestra, but began regular concerts as a chamber orchestra in the 1990s.
Village Coffee Shop is Cafe of the Year 2025. A loved coffee shop in the heart of a Hampshire village has been revealed as the winner of the Cafe of the Year 2025 competition. Over the last few months, readers of the Romsey Advertiser and Hampshire Chronicle have been nominating and voting for their favourite venues. The votes have officially been counted, and we can reveal that Barnaby's Coffee Shop in Swanmore has been awarded the 2025 title. Located in the grounds of St Barnabas Church, it is entirely run by volunteers and doubles as a community hub that donates all its profits to charity and local causes. The shop serves coffee, tea and homemade cakes and prides itself on providing a warm and welcoming atmosphere.
Christmas Market opens. One of the most popular events of the year, Winchester's Christmas Market, has returned this week. The market, which is recognised as one of the best in Europe, opened in the Cathedral Close. And it's open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday to Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. And the market is free to enter. The Reverend Canon Dr. Ronan Ream, Interim Dean of Winchester Cathedral, said, "During the short days and long dark nights of winter, we're proud to offer you the Winchester Cathedral Christmas season with all its friendliness and warmth. The sparkling lights, festive music and Christmas worship speak of hope at the heart of Christmas. We share the Christmas hope that love and mercy, joy and peace come to us from God at Christmas for the whole world to share. Come and visit the Christmas market in its beautiful setting of the Cathedral Close, and come inside the cathedral. Whether you are returning or here for the first time, you will be very welcome." Winchester Cathedral has warned that parking in the city centre is likely to be limited during the market, advising that visitors travel by public transport where possible. The market is a 15-minute walk from Winchester Railway Station, and a 2 to 3 minute walk from Winchester bus station in the Broadway. For drivers, the cathedral asks that they note the park and ride car parks on the outskirts of the city.
It's 56,000 transactions and counting for shop. A farm shop is celebrating its first birthday after a year of serving customers on the High Street. Westland Farm Shop, based on Winchester High Street, has spent the past 12 months championing locally sourced food, including meat from its own Bishop's Waltham herd, and has quickly become a fixture in the city's growing food store scene. In just 1 year, the shop has recorded more than 56,000 customer transactions. Kayleigh Collett, co-owner of Westland Farm Shop, said, "We've been overwhelmed by the support we've received from Winchester community. From day one, our mission has been to connect local producers with local customers, and it's been incredible to see how much appetite there is for quality local food on this high street." The shop's butchery counter, known for its traceable high-quality meat cut to their specifications by skilled butchers, has proven particularly popular with customers. Last weekend, Westlands Winchester marked its anniversary with a public celebration. On the Saturday, customers were invited to enjoy complimentary birthday cake and a free hot drink. The milestone comes at a time when independent retailers are proving their value on high streets across the UK. The team says they remain committed to expanding their offering with new suppliers and products regularly introduced. With Christmas approaching, Westlands has opened its seasonal order book, offering everything from Norfolk bronze turkeys and award-winning pies to curated wines selection. The shop specialises in locally sourced meat, seasonal vegetables, artisan cheeses, fresh bread, and a curated selection of Hampshire produce. All are available from its prime premises at 154 High Street.
A reverse Santa appeal. Winchester Rotary are asking children and adults to give presents to Santa this Christmas. The reverse Santa appeal is encouraging both children and adults to donate presents to Santa so he can then ensure they reach local children in need. Presents can be modest and even second-hand if in good condition. Unwrapped presents can be dropped off at Carter Jonas offices at 9A Jury Street from Monday, November the 10th until Wednesday, December the 10th at 5 p.m. Winchester Rotary's team of elves will then collect and transport them so they can be checked, suitably wrapped and sent to Santa in time for Christmas.
A Winchester man is hoping to raise money for charity by selling a calendar featuring views of the city. Mark Ryan of North Walls is selling the Our Winchester calendar to help collect donations for Winchester Hospice. Mark, who is an author and tennis writer, decided to undertake the project after watching a report about hospices on TV. He said, "I saw a TV news item that said that 2 in 5 adult hospices are having to make cuts, and that just seems so wrong. Why is that happening? Children's hospices are faring better, but 2 in 5 adult hospices are having to make cuts. And surely, as a society, we should be making sure that people in their last weeks and days have everything they need, and that money is not an issue in the care for them. That's a massive thing for me, which made me passionate about this. We can hope to raise £1,000 for the hospice, but for me, it is so important to generate or inspire others to raise money and raise this issue." To put the calendar together, Mark got in touch with photographers in the Winchester Picks and Hampshire Chronicle Camera Club Facebook groups, organising with them to use some of their photos. One of the fun things is that people have been getting this calendar on the other side of the world. There's a signpost below one of the photos we've received that says London 15,274 miles away. It is just fun that the calendar has gone worldwide. If people want to buy the calendar, they can email Mark on Mark Ryan, that's all one word, MarkRyan, 1962, at yahoo.co.uk. Or you can buy it from Winchester Cathedral, Cornflowers, P&G Wells, the Tourist Office, or Bishop on the Bridge, even.
Feral gang who targeted shops, jailed. A gang of burglars who targeted shops across Hampshire and the wider United Kingdom have been jailed for a total of 28 years. The 6 men were convicted of conspiracy to commit burglary following a series of break-ins at stores, including Co-op branches, between April 2022 and September 2023. They forced entry into shops and targeted cash machines, stealing at least £450,000 in cash and causing total losses of more than £600,000. The offences spanned multiple regions, including Hampshire, Somerset, Norfolk, Sussex, Kent, Berkshire, Bedfordshire, Staffordshire and South Wales. Danny Kernaghan of Crestwood View, Eastleigh, Neven Sharma, 37, of Saltmead, Southampton, Harrison Sean Randall, 29, of Mango Road, Southampton, Ravi Palmer, 43, of Southampton, Albert Wiraz, 28, of Priory Road, Southampton. All were connected to between 5 and 13 or 20 offences among them. Judge Christopher Parker, KC, sentencing at Winchester Crown Court, said, "In a civilized society, you each behaved as a part of a wild and feral pack, which had no regard for people's legitimate businesses or other people's livelihoods and their feeling of safety."
TV's Amanda goes back to roots in pub visit. A TV celebrity has gone back to her roots. Amanda Holden, who was born in Bishop's Waltham, visited the Cricketers Inn in Curdridge to celebrate a family occasion. The presenter and actress, who moved to Waltham Chase when she was four, was posted on the pub's Facebook, posing behind the bar and with the staff. The Cricketers Inn posted, "An absolute pleasure welcoming back the fabulous Amanda Holden today for lunch to celebrate a family occasion. She and her family were a delight to serve, and we're looking forward to seeing you back very soon, perhaps for a shift behind the bar." Amanda joined the Bishop's Waltham Little Theatre Company when she was nine and attended Swanmore College until she was 16, when she moved to Bournemouth. She is well known for being a judge on Britain's Got Talent and hosting the Heart Breakfast radio show. And there's a lovely picture of Amanda with her arms around the staff behind the bar, looking as if she'd be quite happy indeed to do a shift.
A tree grown from seeds that survived the atomic bomb. A sapling grown from seeds that survived nuclear attacks on Japan has been planted in a local Winchester primary school. The ginkgo tree, nurtured at the University of Winchester, found a new home in the courtyard of Barton Farm Primary Academy. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Akwal, planted the tree on Armistice Day, Tuesday the 11th of November, alongside the University's Vice-Chancellor, Professor Sarah Gear, and Nicola Wells, CEO of the University of Winchester Academy Trust. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Akwal, said, "It has been 80 years since the first and hopefully last nuclear war. The Mayoress and I were honoured to meet the Mayor of Hiroshima last year at the Mayors for Peace event in Manchester. And the sapling we plant today is a powerful symbol of the importance of this shared mission." The planting took place during Anti-Bullying Week, aligning with this year's theme, Power for Good. Children of the Academy School Counsellors came to witness the event after learning about the significance of the tree in classes and assemblies.
All steamed up for the illuminations. Heritage Railway is lighting up the tracks this winter with a dazzling festive experience. The Watercress Line's steam illuminations will return from November the 28th to December the 28th with a Christmas vibes theme, transforming steam trains into glowing carriages wrapped in thousands of synchronised LED lights. Rebecca Daly, Chief Executive of the Watercress Line, said, "We're thrilled to welcome back steam illuminations for this year, and we've made it even more magical than ever. With brand new shows for our Christmas and pop anthems themes, plus enhanced lighting and live entertainment, this year promises unforgettable festive fun for everyone. The illuminated trains will offer a new sing-along soundtrack and visual displays with every ticket, including a complimentary LED wristband to become part of the show. The experience continues after Christmas with a pop anthems party train running from December the 29th to January the 4th. New features for this year include live onboard performers, a snow cascade, an expanded Christmas courtyard offering festive drinks. The popular talking and singing Christmas trees will also return. Booking is essential and tickets already selling fast, so we encourage people to book early, be part of this spectacular experience." And there's a photograph of the lines dazzling through some of the dazzling rolling stock and LED lights with some children hopping and jumping in joy.
Celebrating 20 years of friendship. A friendship club is marking 20 years of bringing people together. The Week Friendship Club in Winchester, one of Brendan Care's longest-running community clubs, celebrated its 20th anniversary with a special gathering on Friday, October the 31st. Founded in 2005, the club meets every Friday afternoon at Week Community Centre and has become a valued social hub for older people. Hazel Little, an original member and the treasurer when the club started, cut the birthday cake during the celebration and shared memories of the club's beginnings. Hazel said, "This club is all about friendship and ensures that we are not all sat at home all alone." Originally known as the Gaiety Club and run by Club Hampshire, the group became part of Brendan Care's clubs in 2006. Meetings were first held at St Barnabas Church before moving to the community centre. And there's a picture of Hazel Little with a delicious-looking cake, just about to cut it with a knife, surrounded by all the other ladies and I think a couple of men at the back, all part of this friendship club.
Opportunity to sponsor donkeys at the Boas Project. Donkey walks, cream teas and countryside views are all part of a new sponsorship scheme. The Boas Project at Hill Farm in Sutton Scotney is inviting the public to sponsor its two resident donkeys, Dominic and Dave. Sponsors can choose their favourite donkey and enjoy an annual donkey walk followed by a cream tea. Cat Phillips, events and volunteer coordinator, said, "A Boas donkey sponsorship would make a perfect Christmas or birthday gift. It's a simple way to show love for animals, enjoy a walk with your chosen donkey, and be part of something a little bit special." Sponsorship costs £60 a year or £5 a month and includes a sponsorship certificate plus regular updates about life on the farm. The Boas Project is a Christian-based charity and offers wellness activities involving animals and horticulture. The farm is home to 7 sheep, 2 guinea pigs and a flock of hens. Walking with Dominic and Dave offers a gentle way to enjoy the outdoors, with the donkeys leading relaxed afternoon walks through fields. More than 30 adults with learning disabilities regularly attend the project. Each sponsorship helps support the charity's work as directed by its trustees.
Children's Hospice, facing a £1.4 million deficit. Naomi House and Jack's Place have reported that it will have to access its reserves after their running costs have risen by a third. This comes after the Together for Short Lives overstretched and underfunded the State of Children's Hospice funding in 2025 report that the costs have risen by an average of 15% for hospices. The report states that the demand for children's palliative care is rising and pressures are mounting across the health and care system. Since the year 2019, the number of children and young people receiving end-of-life care has more than doubled, rising by 98% nationally. Naomi House and Jack's Place receive a small amount of government funding, but rely heavily on donors to deliver full service. Government funding is never guaranteed and always falls short of what is needed and hasn't kept pace with rising demand and increasing costs. Another contributing factor to rising costs is the constant struggle to recruit and retain skilled staff. Mark Smith, chief executive at Naomi House, said, "The reason we are utilising our reserves is because we have ambitious plans to invest in our facilities and services to ensure we can be here for children, young adults and their families in the long term. We wish to deliver the full service that our families expect and more, including becoming a research and education centre, supporting other medical professionals and hospices, doing more in the community and supporting even more children and young adults. The support of our community means that over the coming year, we can look forward to being able to reach more and do more for the families who need us." Katie Lumsden, Director of Finance at Naomi House, said, "Keeping a charity like ours operating at such a high level is a financial balancing act. Every pound and every penny has to work as hard as possible, and rising costs are putting us under strain. While our charitable expenditure has increased by 31% since 2020-21, local NHS funding from integrated care boards is 25% lower. We can operate a deficit, but we can't do this forever."
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart,
goodbye,
Nick Kearns,
goodbye,
and Paul Newman,
goodbye,
and from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.